estate services, Lavazzi and Boob1.co.uk present the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 474, I think. I'm Adam and, oh shame, and here's Robert Haynes.
Who are you calling freaky?
Debbie Melrose.
Get off my world!
Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
What am I supposed to do, lecture them on archaeology?
Mary Lang.
Merlin, against all hope.
And Matthew Cressel.
£5, please.
Oh, you have to do that one again, Matthew. It didn't quite come through properly.
£5, please.
No, you need better... Doesn't he need better internet, everybody? He said £5, please. Yeah. Everybody do that. And our very special guest for today, Sophie Aldred.
Gordon Bennett, what a bunch of spots.
And that was unplanned, so very well done.
I do love you all, though.
Welcome, Sophie. Have you taken the appropriate ointment for before?
Robert, do you know you're on camera?
He does.
Yeah,
he needs to be
I
on
do.
Camera.
Okay.
I think it's nice if somebody's got their camera on you, so she knows who she's talking to.
You look like one of those broadcasts that used to be from up in space.
Might as well be. I'm in Australia.
That explains.
It does look like an old Radio 1 DJ.
He's hanging upside down.
Right then.
You look a bit like Peter Simon. Who thinks he looks like Peter Simon?
Well, me?
No.
Robert. Oh. Right then, today we're going to be talking about a couple of things. We're going to start with Battlefield, because that's the one we've watched recently. And I haven't actually watched Battlefield for a while. In fact, how long is it, Kirby, since I last watched Battlefield?
You asked me this when I didn't have it.
Here we go. The man who's always got the information ready.
June the 24th, 2014.
There you go.
So, yes, and there's my little DVD, which I accidentally ejected. It's one of those things that you don't realise how much you enjoy something until you watch it again. And I'm going to say when we have reviewed the episode in our normal format later on that I absolutely adore this. I don't know what you lot say. No, Mary probably won't like it very much, but I absolutely adore this. I had so much fun watching it.
DVD. This is the first one. When I joined the podcast and I started collecting the DVDs, this was the first one I bought.
Was it?
Wow.
Did you buy the special edition, Debbie?
I've actually got the double. I've got the original and the special edition.
Well, wow. I've only got the special edition.
Right.
But, obviously.
No, Sophie, you always get asked this question, I'm sure, but you must have lots and lots of memories of Battlefield because, one, it's a location shoot. Two, you nearly died. And three, there was lots of iconic people in it, really, actors and characters. And it looked like they threw quite a lot of money at this episode.
I don't know about money, but anyway, what was all those other things you said? Working with those brilliant people. I mean, Angela Bruce and I are still great, great mates. Oh. Of course, the late, great Nick Courtney was for working with Nick. Although we'd met each other at Doctor Who conventions, so we already had had struck up a great friendship. But it was brilliant working with him, you know, character from my childhood. And James Ellis and just extraordinary people. And then of course, it was extraordinary thinking now that there was this woman from upstairs, downstairs.
Jean Marsh.
I was quite overawed by that actually, because I used to absolutely love Upstairs, Downstairs. And she added to my collection of upstairs. I then had one upstairs actor, Simon Williams from Remembrance of the Daleks, and one downstairs character.
Did her husband ever visit her on set? Sorry, Mary.
Did her husband ever visit her on set?
Oh, I don't know, actually. No, I don't think he did. Yeah, because we were right in the middle of nowhere doing the filming. We did some in the studio. So the tank episode to which you alluded, that was in the studio.
Yeah.
But we did have this wonderful time on Rutland Water, which, for those of you who don't know, Rutland is the smallest county in England. And it's and Rutland Water is this... it was a village at one point, and then it got flooded to be a reservoir. So one of those sort of magical places, which is which presumably has a whole church and a village underneath, somewhere down underneath the water. But yeah, so we were in the middle of nowhere filming, so nobody came to visit, as far as I can remember.
My 10-year-old daughter watched this episode with me, and the bit when you are in the tank, she was excessively worried because I'd already alluded to what had happened. She's she was so anxious.
Yeah, but did she notice the crack in the glass?
Sorry.
What
was the question? Was there a question?
I just said to Debbie whether her daughter noticed the crack in the glass.
Isla's incredibly observant like that. And it was quite funny because I was a couple of years older than her when I saw this episode. And it was so brilliant to watch her reaction to the way I and my sisters reacted to that scene. Because obviously we're all big fans of Ace. And it's the companion that's the closest to our age and that we'd seen. And suddenly she was in such peril that and the doctor was just being battered by this dragon, that we were just all desperate. And watching it through her eyes again this week has just been absolutely fantastic.
It was amazing how actually it was a classic cliffhanger, wasn't it? Sister in tank of water, doctor, and then the credits roll. I was so chuffed about that.
But the studio footage, you can hear Sylvester go, "Get her out, get her out."
Well, he really completely saved my life because, he'd realised that I couldn't see or hear anything really. The director had kind of lost it a bit by that time because it was the very end of the day. We only had about 15 minutes to shoot this whole thing. Wow. So the cameras were rolling, which is why they've got the footage. And the water, they were pumping in the water over my head, so I couldn't hear anything. So Sylvester had these hand signals that he was doing outside the tank, and it all was well. But I mean, if you do watch that, his reaction is so quick, it's incredible. And his shout is so loud that everybody immediately did exactly what he said. And then following that, as I was lifted out of the tank by the visual effects guys above, I could see everybody just running for the exits because, of course, the tank, once split, the glass and water came swooshing out all over the floor. And then, of course, there's the electricity problem because all the cameras had their great big cables. Mm-hmm. So Sylvester again shouted at the top of his voice, "Somebody turn off the electricity," which they duly did. Yeah. But I mean, he really, really did. He became a true superhero.
But your next scene in the story is coming out of the lake with Excalibur. That must have been freezing.
Well, it wasn't half as freezing as Lulworth Cove in April, which I'd done for Curse of Fenric. it was actually not too bad. And actually, it was very shallow. And that was a problem because in that place. So I had to sort of kneel under the water, as I remember. But then, of course, when you're under the water, you get all disorientated. So we did a couple of takes. You can't tell which is the flat surface of the water. So we did it a few times and the sword was coming out at a funny angle, you know. So I had to work out how to get the sword straight up out of the lake.
I didn't think that was... I thought it might have been a stuntman that did the sword going straight up bit. But that's amazing that you did that. Stunt woman as well. Adding to your many talents. Yes, right.
I was in a half wetsuit, it wasn't that cold because I think I can't remember when we filmed it, but I think it was summer.
It was during summer, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was actually okay. I do remember also that they had to put my microphone The best thing to put it in to keep it safe, because of course those things are expensive. They tied it inside a condom very, very, very tightly, so it wouldn't get in.
Fair enough.
We've got some stuff coming through on my Facebook feed. Lillian Robin says hi. Terry Marr says hi, everybody. Gaz Turl says hi.
And then I'll take your time
because I wasn't getting the show up and running. Lee Anthony Davis says hello, Adam.
Hi, Lee.
And then Gaz Turl said, yeah, Sophie. And then he says, she cool. Apparently you're cool. Well, it's, but you were when you're in that lake. Incredibly cool in there. We got somebody sharing it on the official Doctor Who group on Facebook. Alan T. Butcher said, can we have this music every week?
What music was that?
Debbie Melrose says, slick. Thank you, Debbie.
Sorry.
And Laurie Nick said, yay, doing the happy dance. I think that's because you're on, Sophie.
We could
actually talk about aspects and behind-the-scenes stuff on Battlefield all day, but we have other things to talk about as well. So before we move on to the other things to talk about, I want anybody else who's on this panel, Matthew Kressel, to see if they want to say anything. Matthew?
Matthew's got his mute thing on.
Asleep?
Yeah, no, I just have my microphone muted.
Oh, okay, we'll switch it back on again.
That won't work, Matthew.
Well, I was adjusting my settings.
Turn it up, turn it up.
Actually hear uh-huh.
Yeah.
You need to turn it up, Matthew.
Closer to the mic.
Well, I thought I already had.
That's better.
Okay. So I do want to ask, because you mentioned working with Nicholas Courtney. Mm. And, of course, somebody who is an icon for those of us who are big fans of particularly of Classic Who. Do you have any special memories particularly of working with him? Because you two kind of have a subplot running through the story where Ace is very kind of not so sure about him. And you kind of are friends by the time it's over with.
He calls him a scumbag.
Yeah, it's a great relationship, I think, that Ace would be like that, incredibly protective towards her doctor.
Mm.
And also that sort of realization that there's somebody been before her, you know, that he's had these and being very suspicious of everybody, particularly a military man. I think she doesn't take kindly to him. Nothing could have been further from the truth with Nick. He's, for those of you who never met him, oh my goodness, he was such a kind, gentle, loving, funny, sweet, great fun to work with, just an absolute joy. So, yeah, it was just laughs from beginning to end. It was great to work with him.
Did you get to meet him on Silver Nemesis? Because he was in the background on that, wasn't he?
Yes, I remember that day where everybody turned up. They all came and played extras. It was lovely, yeah, really nice. And then, of course, because we were also doing conventions a lot of the time. So that's another way of the where we connect as well as the actors who were in the show. So it is like, I remember John Nathan Turner when I first started. He said, you know, it's like a family. Welcome to the family. And I was thinking, oh, yeah, bleh, you know, sick. But in the old sense of the word. But actually, it's true. These I'm still in very close contact with all the companions, with the doctors, with it's. And I've been really missing that contact because, of course, we spend a lot of our weekends together. So it's a big a missing for us lot as it must be for you guys to have this kind of dearth of conventions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Mary, do you have a question?
Oh, I do. I do. When launching into the Seventh Doctor era, we read about and we hear about, you know, the great plan that Andrew Cartmell had for, you know, the series, how he wanted it to go. He wanted the Doctor to be mysterious. And in a lot of the episodes, ones we haven't gotten to yet even, are not that easy to understand, but they take you to kind of a dark place. And I wonder if Cartmell ever on the set or in read-throughs or whatever, like explained to you all where he was going with this. Were you ever enlightened, like why you're doing what you're doing from him? Or were you just given your part and told to play it?
The latter. There was never any time, really. I mean, I think Andrew... As much as it was the Cartmell master plan, I mean, it was mainly discussed between him, and I think Ben Aronovich as well. And Sylvester definitely wanted to be more mysterious and wanted there to be something more to him. So hence the lines like, you know, not just another Time Lord, and who are you, Doctor, and all those things. So that was really driven by Sylvester, and the fact that he also he had a darker jacket in the second season all those sorts of things. So really it was between them, really, but there were no firm ideas. We explored them later in Big Finish audios, but there was, if you ask, there was this sort of overarching idea, this theme that there was going to be this sort of trinity, maybe, that the Doctor was part of, the Omega
and
Rassilon,
yeah.
And the Doctor would have and you know, sort of, if you want to go religious with it, you could use the sort of that iconography, but apart from that, there was nothing written, really, or fleshed out. And also, I would be the last person to hear. I used to just really have enough trouble getting to learn my lines with the schedule.
You were never in a position to go, why am I doing this? This doesn't make any sense.
No, not just really.
Enjoying the ride.
Yeah.
I've got a ride in Betsy, though.
I did. That was brilliant. I remember a friend of mine when I was young had a Betsy, a little matchbox or dinky or whatever the make was. Cool. And to actually be driving Betsy, wow, that was a thrill. It was great.
Brilliant. Who we got? I was trying to think of who we got there. Kirby, have you got something to say?
Yeah, I had a question, not dealing directly with the show, but 3 years ago I met you at the Nashville airport. I was holding up a sign that my oldest daughter had.
Yay!
I was wondering if you still had that sign.
Oh, do you know? I don't think I do. I think it's we've kind of moved house and all that, and I have smaller things. I've got a file in our filing cabinet where people have drawn things or done pictures or photographs or whatever. But sadly, I can't always keep everything.
Yeah, that's okay. I'll tell her that you remember it, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, do. Thank her again.
Yes. I only should say that because Alistair Pearson, a mutual friend of ours, Sophie, when he knew I was going up to meet Peter Capaldi, he did a bit of artwork for Peter and put it in an envelope and asked me to give it to Peter. So I did, and obviously this is when I'm in the line of photo ops people, but Peter took it very sort of kindly and handed it to his aide, and I thought that's the last we'll hear of that. But apparently a few weeks later Alistair got a letter from Peter Capaldi thanking him for the artwork, which is really nice.
It's great to have an original Alistair Pearson, I have to say. I do keep as much of it as I can.
But you must get given so much.
Oh, yeah.
Which is lovely, and don't stop creating and give. That's actually something I wanted to say, that what's brilliant is that Doctor Who inspires the fandom to have their own creativity, like writing stories and the artwork and making films and doing all that. And I love that. I love that part of it.
Robert, have you got any questions?
Funny enough, I don't really.
you're just on for the ride.
But I did want to say, what I really enjoyed watching Doctor in the late 80s, and I was so annoyed that just as it seemed to be finding its groove, and you were such a great pairing, you and Sylvester, that it just ended like that, and I'm just so annoying at the time. I was so gutted because, I consider you one of the great pairings, and, you and Sylvester together, just brilliant. And I really enjoyed the Big Finish audios as well. I think really enjoyed them. Yeah. So I just wanted to say that's all.
Thank you, Robert. Well, I think, you we were blooming annoyed as well, putting it mildly. Because as you say, I think it was just hitting a stride in the final series. And looking at some of those stories now, like, I think Survival, maybe with a bit of redesigning of the Cheetah People costumes, could stand up just as well today. And also Curse of Fenric is a great story, I think, as well. And it's just, it's a real shame that I don't know, I think people have written it off by then, the powers that be, and so it was not to be. But thank goodness, I mean, in a way, it's funny to speculate, though, isn't it, that if we had continued, would the ratings have continued to go down, the BBC wouldn't have been behind it, and would it have just sort of petered out, and then there wouldn't have been the impetus for it to come back? So, you know, maybe with hindsight, it was a good thing. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe so. Debbie?
Well, I was just going to allude to that as well, basically, with moving on to your book, which I must admit, I've read a couple of times, but I've actually listened to a lot more because the way you read is just so eloquent. I really enjoy that. But I love the fact that you yourself have brought the reason why Ace left the Doctor, why she's like she is now, and just the resentment and the unfinished business. And I just wondered if that was cathartic, writing that. I know you've probably been asked a lot of questions about At Childhood's End, but did you feel it was cathartic to write your own almost like exit story whilst bringing Ace into New Who?
Yeah, I mean, it was cathartic, but I think more than for me, it was writing for the fans. You know, what I knew that for, as well as a new audience, and that's quite a hard balance to get. But everything that anyone's ever said to me in at a convention, or written to me in a letter, or whatever, I wanted to try and address as much as possible, as many questions as possible, you know, right down to, why does Ace support Charlton Athletic? You know, why is she Charlton Athletic bad? Why does she talk in a voice that sounds like she's from somewhere much posher than a council estate in Perivale? Why has she had all these different endings and deaths and stories in Big Finish and the comic books and the new adventures and all those strands? I wanted to try and bring them together. And also, I can't talk about At Childhood's End without saying that I could not possibly have written it without Mike Tucker and Steve Cole, because they're consummate writers. They are also huge fans of Doctor Who, so they provided a lot of the kind of the history as well, and the background, and things that I'd forgotten about as well, you know, just little bits and bobs. So it was really a true collaboration. But that was really something I wanted to do, was to really explain for everybody what had happened to Ace in those intervening years, and why she is the way she is now. Luckily, we just filmed the trailer, the season 26 Blu-ray trailer. So I really wanted to bring that in as well, because I thought that was such a great, I thought that was absolutely right for Ace. And that had in its turn had been sparked off by that one line in the Sarah Jane Adventures that Russell T. Davis written. Somebody called Dorothy, who's running a charity called A Charitable Earth. Well, there's a whole world in that line.
Yes.
And we ran with all of that, really.
It was lovely to hear you characterising all these new characters and old characters, and going a little bit sort of backwards or forwards in time, and your impression of Sylvester's Doctor as well.
I especially like it when you say Astingales in his accent.
Rolling the R's.
With the rolled R's.
Yeah,
I particularly enjoyed doing Chantelle's squeak And it was funny because I did bump into Adele at a convention at the beginning of the year. So it's quite funny to kind of like, I mean, she's nothing like Chantel, but she's
that's who you had in your mind.
She does actually talk like that in real life.
Yeah. I used to talk like that till I moved to the Isle of Wight. Yeah, and then I had
right,
to go to
Debbie,
engine.
Come on.
Oh, yes, my father had that when he went away to, he got a scholarship to public school, and he had a Derbyshire accent, or a sort of, or Derbyshire, Nottinghamshire accent, and he had it knocked out of him. He had to go every night, this shows the sign of the time, he had to go every night to these older boys and read something to them in an RP voice.
Yeah. Pretty much what I did, yes. And it is second nature now. But then, when
she
I go
still
back
can't
home,
say
Esprit
Omega
accent comes back. And then Yorkshire accent comes back if I go even further.
Oh, isn't that funny?
A chameleon.
But yeah, one of my favourite aspects of the story is Squidget. I think it's such an ingenious idea, and something that could definitely be bought in to Doctor Who now.
Well, the Doctor seems so enamoured of Squidget, doesn't she, in this? Yeah. Absolutely loves Squidget.
Yes, yeah. And can you imagine? I mean, the marketing opportunity as well.
I'd love to see an artistic rendition of it. To be fair,
I'm waiting for the super green myself.
Yeah. Obviously, I'm going to have to buy this book because
you will. Yes, Kobe. Buy the audio book. The audio book's even better.
Yes,
sure.
It's fantastic.
Oh, thank you. Well, I thoroughly enjoyed reading it, you know, bringing it to life off the page. And the funny thing about recording that was that we were working from a kind of a final draft. So the good thing was I could still, there were still a few tweaks that I made. And because I don't know, but it's really weird when I you could proofread something to absolute death, and then when you read it out loud, that's when you suddenly see the typos and the kind of slight plot points and things like that. I've done it with so many audiobooks now. There's always typos, which you can't get until you read it out loud. It's strange, very strange.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Kirby alluded to when we had you on first on from ConGT. I interviewed you at IslandCon in 2008. And I'm funny feeling, were you in the processes of beginning the book?
2018.
All right. Woo. I got it wrong. I'd rather it was 2008. I wouldn't feel so old. But yeah, so was it in progress in that point when you had chatted to me then?
No, it wasn't. It all happened very quickly. It wasn't until, let's see, it was probably July, I think, last year.
Wow.
And then we had to deliver by the end of October, so it was amazingly quick. I mean, that's partly why I could never have done it without Steve and Mike.
Yeah.
We were kind of, it was a frantic bit of writing, it was.
Well, very successful bit of writing. Are you going to do any more?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think... I don't know whether I've already said everything I wanted to say. There might be more. I don't know. But
well, certainly there's some new characters, isn't there? And there's a love interest for... I shouldn't say that. Or should I? There may be a love interest for Dorothy.
He was a love interest for Dorothy.
I didn't want to spoil too much.
He
but
was. That was the illusion. Still cares for her. Still holds a talk.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah.
That was all
he's
good stuff.
Jealous of the present one. And I love the fact that, you know, what we thought was that Dorothy would have issues with her relationships, because of everything she'd been through. That was great to explore, the sort of psychological damage, really, from being taken at the age of 16, and then not really having had sort of not having normal experiences, that's for sure.
Yeah. Must be when I was reading it up to the point in which, no spoilers, there's a point in which we leave Earth.
We've gone past having to say no spoilers.
Well, I don't want to spoil too much. I want people to buy it, but it felt very James Bondy with all the sort of gadgets and the machines that are coming out.
Because Ace, she does, you know, with her Nitro 9 and her, she's always got the rucksack with her metal rope ladder in and you can't say metal rope ladder, but you know what I mean. And the baseball. and then of course when the doctor kind of in Curse of Fenric, he kind of zhuzhes her baseball bat to make it super duper. And the thinking was, well, hang on, she'd be really into her James Bond type stuff.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And the secret bunker where she kind of creates everything that she wants to create.
And I love the fact you brought in the contrast with new ways of thinking, obviously with what's the lady called in current times? Can't remember the name of the current girl, but she has a go at Ace for having Nitro 9.
Yaz. Well, it's great because she's a great foil for Ace, of course, because she is the equivalent of Ace now.
Yeah.
So Ace is kind of like, not jealous exactly, but she's, and then this sort of like, but very different, obviously. But of course, Yaz is a policewoman, so she's not going to be chucking explosives around. And also, it was a way of, I have to say, explaining, really, because you can't really do that anymore. It's funny, isn't it, to think in 1987 we were so innocent about bombs and explosions and
homemade explosives and
Well, of course, Deb's alluding to the fact that the 13th Doctor is in the story, and of course your impression of the 13th Doctor is pretty spot on, to be fair.
Thank you. I like doing Jodie's Doctor. That was for me the most crucial scene, was where Jodie's Doctor meets Dorothy Ace, because I think that's what, in a way, what we've all been waiting for, you know. Yeah. And we did quite a lot of rewrites on that because it had to be right, you know.
Lots of stuff coming through on the feed. Robert Vince Jr. says, "Hi everybody, hi Sophie."
Hello.
And then he says, "I wish Ace and Sarah Jane could have got together."
that nearly happened.
Nearly happened.
It was a real shame because I found out years later, after dear Liz had died, that was the next plan. Russell wanted to have Ace. What was going to happen was that this sports car was going to drive up to Ace's door, which is partly why we got the idea of her having this car in the book as well. This beautiful sports car would drive up to Sarah Jane's door. You'd just see this very smart person with high heels, but you wouldn't know who it was. And then it would cut to Sarah Jane's point of view as she opened the front door, and there would be Dorothy in this sort of business suit. And then they would, but Russell had said, well, don't worry, she'd very soon be whacking Daleks with a baseball bat and running, taking her high heels off, put her Doc Martens back on. So yeah, and it was such a shame that was not to be, because I would have absolutely loved to have worked with Liz. She was, of course, she and Joe Grant were my companions growing up. It would have been a dream come true. Of course, Liz and I knew each other very well from the convention scene, but it would have been extra special to have actually worked with her.
Yeah, I mean, I was saying to my wife that Ace would have fitted in to a spin-off series like Sarah Jane Adventures quite nicely. You could manage in the house with all those characters and sort of having an adopted son, because, again, she would never have time to have kids herself.
No.
What else we got coming through?
Did you like the cat called Sorin as well?
Yes. I loved Sorin.
Yep. Neil James says, "Hi Sophie, what was your favourite location that you filmed at during your time on Doctor Who?"
Oh, that's a great question. I think it must be all the places we went to in Dorset. Lulworth Cove, I think. Lulworth Cove is a very special place. And even though I had to jump into this freezing cold water in April and it had just been snowing the week before, I'm very fond of it. And we actually went back there to do the making of the documentary for the Blu-ray for the season 26. And that was really special because the weird thing was we arrived there Tom Eck and Sylve, we all gathered in this room in this hotel for makeup. And we're sitting in this room and Sylvester suddenly went, "This is my room that I had when we did the filming here." And sure enough, it was the very same room that he stayed in when we filmed in Lulworth Cove.
Wow.
It was
wow.
Really special, completely by coincidence. And it was lovely being back there with those two as well. It was great.
Mm-hmm. So that's on the Blu-ray for those who don't have.
Sorry, Mary.
That's okay. I'm waiting for Robert. When you were first introduced into the series and you were working on that first episode, your introduction with Bonnie Langford, what was it like working with her?
Oh, wow. Well, I couldn't believe it. When I first walked into the rehearsal room for the read-through, and there's Bonnie Langford and Tony Asober and Pat Quinn and people sitting around this table, I was so kind of overawed, really, because Bonnie I'd watched on TV growing up, and so I knew of her for many years, but we just got on like a house on fire and still do. It's just always a joy to be with her. It's such a shame how I think there was a time when the British public associated her with playing these brat roles, because she was extremely good at playing brats. She played in Bugsy Malone, she played one, and then of course famously in the Just Williams series. Yeah. In the 70s, was it? She played Violet Elizabeth Both. "I'll scream and scream until I'm sick." People thought that's what she was like, which is not true. You know, she's an actress, actually, don't you realise? But of course, do get mistaken for their characters. So it was just brilliant working with Bonnie. She was so helpful and so generous. And so fun to be with, and I always love to see her whenever we get together.
You're not going to do an impression of her, are you? Because we had Jessica Martin on last week, who did a spontaneous impression of Bonnie Langford.
Well, she did with the screaming, screaming, screaming.
Yeah. No, she did Bonnie Langford as she is normal. Bonnie Langford.
Yeah. She did.
Oh yes, I know.
That's very good.
Excellent.
Is there anyone that you did not get along with on any of the sets?
Nope.
Oh. Okay.
Absolutely not. No, every single person, and I'm talking cast and crew alike, were absolutely wonderful to work with.
Lillian Robbins says, "Did they test the glass before filming? Seems like a big oversight."
Obviously.
Oh, yeah. Well, somebody hadn't done their maths properly, and I think they were also cutting costs. Yeah. I think what had happened was that they'd done volume of water and person in, but they hadn't allowed for the fact that I would be moving in the tank.
Yeah, because you're punching the glass, aren't you?
Well, I wasn't punching, but
I was hitting it. Pushing, yeah. Pressing
it was actually just the sheer moving inside the tank, you know, exerts more pressure, blah, 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 blah. So that's what did it. But I don't think it was thick enough, you know. Well spotted.
Alan T. Butcher says, "Sophie's reading of her book is a closely studied performance of what was an excellent and really well thought through story."
Everything in Alan T. Butcher's feedback is, of course, a closely studied something, something, something.
Oh.
And his feedback every week.
Oh, that's
it's
brilliant.
Eloquent. And so he uses the longest words he can find just to throw me or Mary off.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Robert Bench Jr. says, "Sophie, I came in kind of late. If the show kept going, were you going to the Doctor's home world to be a Time Lord?"
Ah, yes. Well, this is one of the ideas that
yes.
was that Ace was going to, the Doctor was going to drop Ace off on Gallifrey and have her become a Time Lord and sort of, I guess, infiltrate the Time Lords and put the wind up them, you know, sort of just like modernize them. I can just imagine Ace with one of those robes and the collar. Yes. She'd have it covered in badges.
Which yes, the blue pizza one on the top.
It would have a big A here. And then it would have like blue pizza badges and... Yeah. Dennis the Menace and things like that.
Well, you are in the Gallifrey series for Big Finish.
I am, yes. I mean, that's a really great thread. I like that ending for Ace, that you know, what happened next. I thoroughly enjoyed those.
You alluded to that in the book as well when you're looking at the different futures she could have had.
Yeah.
And you've got her walking with the collar, yes, on, walking towards the city.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Louise Jameson too.
Yeah, that would have been really fun.
Tim Drury says, "Good to hear Sophie, who is excellent in Syl and the Devil Seeds of Arador."
Oh yeah,
award for.
That's right. Well, I mean, I've blink and you miss it almost, but but you probably wouldn't miss it given what the scene is all about. So yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed doing this, and in fact. It's always great to work with Keith Barnfather on the real time stuff. And I met Keith years and years ago doing Mythmakers, and then we did Mind Game and Mind Game Trilogy. And so our paths have crossed, and we're actually great, great friends. So then the next thing that I did with him, oh, well, my son actually played a part in the thing that he did with Damaris. And and then he asked me about Syl. There was another project that he wanted to get off the ground, but he realized that it wasn't going to be, Syl was much more manageable. And he said, look, it's a much smaller part, but I think it would be great. And it's got prosthetics. And I know you've always wanted to have a go at those. So I thought, yeah, why not? And then it's funny because he ended up asking me about casting as well. So I managed to get Shakuntala, who'd been in Survival, on board, and Janet Henfrey, who was in Curse of Fenric. I got her on board as well, and then Shakuntala got her son. So it turned into a sort of another one of these lovely family affairs, really.
Ensemble type thing.
Yeah. Mm. Brilliant to work with Nabil. I mean, oh my God, how the heck
did he... Lovely.
How did he learn all those lines? I do not know. he's just a consummate professional as well. He was brilliant to work with. So yeah, it was another lovely experience.
Well, well over the half hour you promised us, so I'll just before I let you go. Has anybody got anything they'd like to say before it's too late?
I've just remembered something.
Oh, yes.
About I just really love that trailer on the DVD, on the Blu-ray, sorry.
Mm.
And I just, I kind of wanted to go on and see what the next adventure would be, you know, back with the Doctor again. But so it was such a lovely, lovely little film piece, I thought that was.
Do you know, it's such a joy to get that opportunity. Pete McTighe just sent me an email out of the blue and said, we're doing this Blu-ray trailer. This is what we've been doing with the companions. I'd like to try something a bit different. The previous ones have all been comedic, but this one I'd like to do this. So if you wouldn't mind reading the attached script and let me know what you think. Well, I immediately opened it and read it. And by the end of it, I burst into tears because it was just so beautifully written, so nostalgic and so...
Yeah, I totally agree.
So right, you know? Yeah. And I just got straight back to him and I said, yes, 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 of course. When do we start? And it was a lovely, again, a really another gorgeous experience of a Doctor Who experience. We actually did film it in an office opposite the Tower of London. Found this fantastic location. And I stood there for quite some time at that window while they were setting up the shots and getting everything right. And I was thinking to myself, gosh, come on, guys, it's getting dark. And of course, that was the point. He was waiting. Pete was waiting for the perfect time. The lights came on Tower Bridge and the sun was just going down. And it was just such a brilliant moment. And Matthew Sweet was there as well, because
I loved that interview.
He's brilliant. He's such a great interviewer. And he hung around to watch the filming of the trailer. He's such a great fan. And at the end of it, when I'd done my final shot kind of in vision, turning to sort of towards the camera and going wicked, that was the final shot we cut. And everybody was like, including Matthew, you could hardly speak. We all had lumps in our throats. It was lovely. It was very, very, it was bittersweet. It was great.
Yeah, I love that.
Oh, hang on, I've got something come through. It says, just make sure I'm not reading the same one again. Terry Mars, hi Sophie. In the book, Ace still has the jacket. Have you still got your jacket?
I might have.
I've got a badge jacket. It's just a denim one, but my daughter Isla's been wearing it the past week, calling herself Ace.
That's so brilliant. I love that.
I loved the blue Peter badge. That was a particular thing.
Well, it's just so great that that people are still inspired to make their own Ace jackets and get the badges. And there's a wonderful guy in the States called Kurt Bergeron, and he's done a lot of extensive research on the jacket, and he can get you anything you want for the jacket. He now makes his own Ace badges, because just for the love of it and just wanting to help people with their cosplay, which is just such a lovely thing to do.
That got me thinking, actually, and I forgot what I was going to say, so we'll move on to Neil James. Hi again, Sophie. How many doctors have you actually met? Did you ever cross paths with John Pertwee or Tom Baker?
Absolutely. The only doctors I didn't get to meet were William Hartnell and Patrick Troughton. Patrick passed away, I think, just before I came on board. Yeah, that's right. So I never got to meet him, sadly. But John, who'd been such a hero of mine from a young age, yes, he was at the first convention I ever did, and we hit it off straight away, and he became a great friend. I was also great friends. That's my ringtone, by the way.
The only thing I was going to ask, Debbie, didn't you get something signed by Sophie when she was at IslandCon?
I did. Alistair went over and got it signed for me. It's a little figurine of Ace with her boombox and the picture and the dress that she wears, the beautiful...
from Ghost
Right, yes, yeah. And Alistair very kindly went, yeah, I'll go and get it signed. But unfortunately, he thought he was getting it signed for Adam's wife. And I'm very grateful, thank you.
Neil James says, Christ, that reads like I think Tom has passed. I know he's still with us.
Oh, that's right. Yes, well, Tom, yes, I've met him on many occasions. And in fact, I worked with him on a children's radio thing. And then, we get on very well. Yeah, it's great. Guys, it's okay. Somebody was calling me, but she's all right.
Well, let you go in a minute. Unusual amount of questions coming through.
Tell you my Tom Baker story.
Oh, go on then. Tell me your Tom Baker story.
Yes.
Well, I hadn't met him until I went to a convention in Baltimore, and I saw him in the departure lounge at Heathrow, wearing his customary Mac and carrying his plastic bag, which he always carried with him. And we arrived in America, got to the hotel. He didn't really even say hi. I don't think he even realized, you know, who I was or what I was doing there until we went and did the pledge drive. for the local PBS station. And we were sitting there waiting to go on to this live pledge drive. And I said something about, I can't remember, but it was some journalist who, and he suddenly turned to me and I think he realized that, oh, I actually had a brain. And he started talking to me about various things and he just didn't stop. they ushered us through to the studio and he was carrying on chatting away. And I said, Tom, we're on air. Yes. Anyway. and from then we were absolute firm friends. And then when I did go and do this radio show with him, I turned up and the producer who I'd worked with several times before said, Tom, this is Sophie Aldred. She's going to be presenting the show with you. And Tom got up out of his chair and he's not inconsiderable in height. And he put his arms out like this and he said, I'm thinking of adopting Sophie. Me to his chest. It was wonderful. So, yes, we're great mates.
That was a brilliant story. And John Steed says, if you were asked back to Doctor Who now to play it. Pardon?
There's a good name.
John Steed. Yeah. If you were asked back to Doctor Who now to play Ace, how would you play her character? Basically, I think it's supposed to be, how would you play Ace as an adult? I would suggest certainly getting this book,
which
does rather illustrate that fact. At Childhood's End by Sophie Aldred.
Very good. I like it. Yes, definitely. That and the Blu-ray of the 26th season.
I've got.
Yeah, because that's both of those really kind of, that's exactly where I would take the character of Ace.
Fantastic. Well, I think we might have got there. So, yeah.
Brilliant.
Unless somebody interrupts me, which happens quite a lot on this show, I think you've done this.
I won't interrupt you this week.
Oh, you just did that.
We didn't last week.
I better go and ring my poor friend in America.
Yes.
thank you, Sophie. So
It's been great fun. Thanks for coming on.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for Wicked. Thanks for inviting me.
Wicked.
Nice.
Come to Chicago TARDIS again in the near future, because that's where
yes, please. Well, Jean messaged me today, funnily enough, so.
Ooh.
It's in the offing, Mary. It's in the offing.
Yeah, yay. Okay.
All right, Sophie. My dears. Take care.
And
stay
you.
Safe.
Stay safe, yeah.
And, really, I hope everybody, I mean, we've got another lockdown here for a month, and I know how difficult that is for many, many people. You may have one where you are as well. So I'm thinking of everybody. Can't wait till we get back to see each other in person again. But in the meantime, have as much fun as you can. And actually, that's a good lockdown activity, isn't it? Buy at Childhood End.
That's
at Childhood
End. Yeah, that's a good idea. Back up on the screen. Watching on Facebook. There we go. At Childhood End.
Very good.
And the audio book, which is
excellent.
And
the audio
book.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sophie.
Bye. Everybody.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye, Sophie. Bye.
Ah, it's Robert. Right. The whole stream was filled up with Robert then. Right,
there's
okay.
Like that.
Stuff coming through. Neil James says, what a ray of sunshine, Sophie. Thanks so much. Laura Nick, such a treat. And thanks, Sophie, from Terry Mars. And now what we're going to have to do, Kirby, I know you won't like this. We're going to have to gloss through Battlefield. Is that all right with you?
That's fine. Kirby can't do that.
Well, we're going to try. Because I like this story so much.
No, I've got a suggestion.
You got a suggestion?
I've got a suggestion. People can go back and re-listen to episode 226.
Right. So was Debbie on that one?
Yes.
Yes.
Was Mary on it?
Yes.
Robert wasn't.
I wasn't either, for that matter.
Right, well, I'm going to talk about it a little bit.
Do talk about it.
Quick synopsis. Yeah. So basically, there's Brigadier Bambera, who's fantastic.
Love her.
Pardon?
Yeah, I think she's great.
We start off with, I think it's with the old Brigadier in his garden with Doris. The only thing I didn't like about that...
Master?
What?
That's not his garden.
All right, shut up. A garden with Doris. But the only thing I didn't like that is when he talks about his previous career as if he's never told her, and he must have told her before then.
I know.
But yes, and then we have Brigadier, wonderful Brigadier Bambera, who's sort of that's another one that I didn't say with Sophie on, the strong female characters in this story, and it was written by a bloke, but he's brought in lots and lots of really strong female characters, believably strong, not stereotypical. They're all really strong characters, which I absolutely loved. And it gave me, and I don't know my full synopsis about this, but it gave me a feel of New Who. This is the first classic Who story, which feels like New Who to me, even with the JNT-nesses about it. Basically the Brigadier gets him brought, he gets called back. He's on retirement, but some things kicking off with these aliens.
Geneva.
A landing, and the Doctor obviously arrives and sort of knows he's been involved in it, but he hasn't yet. I do like that in Doctor Who. It's a shame we haven't visited the story in which he does get involved in it, but it's a bit like Face of Evil, where his future self has done something to mess it up, sort of thing. And there's a little bit of sorcery going on, but it's alien sorcery, so it's part of an alien thing going on. Obviously, they bring in the characters. I recognise that James Ellis when he was in Zed Cars, I think. And he plays almost like a... It's almost like a gamekeeper chap driving around in his Range Rover, isn't he, quite a lot? Peripheral but quite a nice sort of character to have around. There's a lovely lake. The scenery's great, isn't it? The location they use for this, even the studio stuff. Isn't it? There's a couple of quite cheesy bits. The snake bit when it was flying at the Doctor, where he just sort of pushed the camera away. It's a bit like the Cures video.
Yes, but... it's a really dangerous snake. It just pushes him.
Yeah, it just pushes him. Yeah, just, and he waits for it to push him as well.
Yeah.
And it just stops once it pushes him too.
Yes. Yes, very atmospheric. Even the only thing I didn't like about the creature, you know, the destroyer, was he had human eyes. I think he could have done with
a
contact thing to make his eyes look more
alien.
That's
what I reckon.
Other than that, it was a fantastic.
It was really good apart from that. It was a bit off-putting.
He's a good monster.
Yeah.
And Master?
Yeah.
Well, he wasn't really a good monster in the end.
Master, you know, one of the reasons they hired him was that he had this parlor trick where he could expand his chest. And so he used that to break out of his chainmail.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
His fake chainmail.
Like the Hulk.
Yeah. Yes. but it was a beautiful prosthetic and design on the monster, and they realised it really, really well.
That still exists, you know, that headpiece.
It does. It doesn't surprise me.
In the Blu-ray, they team him up again with the guy who designed it.
Just show it. Tell us that you've got the Blu-ray. I'm sure.
I've got the Blu-ray, and it is very good. Honestly,
Kirsty just got the Blu-ray as well.
The other thing I liked was when the Brigadier, our Brigadier, arrives, meets up with Brigadier Bambera, the Brigadier Bambera just immediately says, yes, sir, and lets him take over without any moans and grumbles.
Did you notice the call signs as well? Because he got Greyhound 1 again.
Did he?
When Bambera's calling him, she says, Greyhound 1, go Greyhound 1.
And her sort of romantic sort of... what was the character name? Alistair or something like that?
Ancillon,
that's it.
I think it's a Welsh version of Lancelot, which is fun because Winifred is also one of the names for Guinevere as well.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. Oh, very good.
I love the way they beat each other up. It's so
that's how they met. And I love them.
Yes.
They still sort of strike a sort of a love together, which for me, it works really, really well because the type of characters they were. Yes.
Can I mention something about them fighting, Bambera and... You know, when you see them fighting in the background when the Doctor and that are talking, that was just all improvised. It was no choreographer for the fight. They just said, we're actors together. So that was part of them with their sparring off each other.
But they got the comedy and the drama side of it absolutely bang on. They didn't sort of make it overtly humorous. It was just funny in the right places because you have to have some comedy in all sort of... dramas, otherwise it's just too depressing, isn't it? But
it's got to be the right sort of comedy as well, because Sometimes I think in New Who that's too forced. They try
Yeah,
to go
you're
too...
probably right, yeah. I mean, the Doctor himself, there was a couple of occasions where he looked like he wasn't quite... He'd sort of lost... He was trying to manipulate things, and he'd lost the manipulation. He had to reel it back in again. There was little nods here and there to previous stories.
Master?
Yes?
Speaking of call signs, I'm sure you saw where I posted on the Facebook group, which you can join. when I was starting to rewatch it, the very first scene has Brigadier Bambera on the phone going, "Salamander, do you copy?" And I...
Oh, yes, you did. Yeah, I saw you do that. Very clever, that was, Kirby.
Picture
well done.
Of Salamander.
Yeah. Oh, you got a ding, Kirby.
That was, well, no! I was impressed with that.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
No, you can't, but that was really, really good.
That's pushing it, Kirby.
Excuse me. Of course, then we had the it's like the base under siege scenario where they, drew the chalk circle, which is it Morgaine was walking around it, her cloth, yeah. Her sort of dress was going in it a little bit. I thought, is that going to go off in a puff of smoke? What we didn't mention, of course, is that Jean Marsh back as the wonderful Morgaine, who was the first, as far as I know, only previous companion to come back to play a different character.
No, she's done it. That was her third appearance.
Yes, but she was a companion. Sarah Kingdom was an official companion of the Doctor.
Yeah. Oh, well, Jacqueline Hill had been at Megloss.
Oh, of course she had.
Else, too.
Yes.
Oh,
Matthew.
Oh, woo!
Well done. But also, I've forgotten that. Yeah, why am I not surprised you knew that one?
So Jean Marsh has sort of played she played that queen in Willow as well. So that was
yes. Well, somebody mentioned her husband, and I don't think Sophie realised who we were referring to. Who is her husband?
John Pertwee was at one time.
I was going to say it myself. Yes, I don't think they were married at the time, though.
No.
when she filmed this story.
And there's also that scene in this story where the Brigadier and her having that little face off where they're not quite fighting yet.
To me, that's
really just to show them, have them have a nice scene because they had played brother and sister way back with the first Doctor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which Jean Marsh talks about in the DVD documentary that was originally made in I think 2008, 2009 when this first came out.
Yeah,
the fact that she actually had completely forgotten that her and Nick Courtney had worked together before he approached her on the set.
Are you referring to that wonderful scene when Courtney comes up, the Brigadier comes up and she says something like, "What kind of man are you?"
Yeah.
That scene by the graveyard.
She, how goes the day?
Oh, so good.
Yeah. Yeah,
I love that because they are honouring the dead because they've realised how civilised we are as a human race, and that is because that's why she doesn't kill him on sight.
Yeah,
is because actually we're honouring the dead. Let's have a tête-à-tête.
And she knew that he was a military man as well.
Yes, yeah.
Half of her soldiers are wearing blue jeans.
Are they?
Yes.
I noticed that.
You pointed that out the first time round. I remember that. Mm. I had to go back and look, and this time I noticed it.
I didn't. Of course, there was a couple of little sort of Nathan Turnerisms, and one obviously Bessie coming back, but I didn't mind that at all.
Well, why did they use Who 7 instead of Who 1?
Because McCoy was the seventh Doctor, and they felt they needed to update
but that
it for
is
a
corny.
Reference.
That's a bit.
It is a bit corny, yes, but doesn't matter, does it?
Yeah, but it was in Mothballs, so, who went in there and changed it?
Yes.
Yeah, but the thing is, that was transported to Gallifrey in Five Doctors. So how did it get back? Because it didn't come back in the TARDIS, did it?
Five Doctors...
Stop arguing over it, guys. You're talking over each other. I'll set Debbie onto you.
Sorry. The third Doctor segment in Five Doctors is clearly set before Planet of the Spiders, where Bessie gets used because it ends up, if I remember right, he gets stolen at one point by Lutton, if I remember right, who drives off during the epic episode 2, half an episode chase across half of England, it feels like. So clearly, and also remember the fourth Doctor uses it in Robot, too. So clearly it got back to Earth at some point.
Oh, it doesn't matter. It was a charming little... And nod.
Pardon me for being so dumb not to notice that the seven was seventh Doctor.
Yeah, Kirby.
Didn't realize that, Kirby.
Ding deleted.
Yeah, definitely.
The other thing we have to mention, of course, is that there was a bit of a quite heavy reference to silver. Have we got new silver bullets? Obviously, it was always going to sort of
isn't
save
that
the day in the end.
That it just happens to be the metal.
And
that the,
it's good that it was fairly obvious. Obviously, when the Morgaine released the beast, as I'd like to call him, and he started ripping all his stuff off and making his chest bare so the Brigadier could actually shoot him. felt that might be happening. Of course, the scene in which he zaps the Brigadier out, that was when the Brigadier was actually supposed to die in the original script, but they decided they just couldn't kill him.
And you notice when he knocks the Doctor out to rush in there to save the day, it's just a little tap on the chest.
It was Venetian Akita.
Yeah, he suddenly remembered that.
Third Doctor taught him how to do that.
The silliest thing about the story is they're spinning to go through that portal.
Yeah,
it was all right. I didn't mind that. I liked that clever.
Oh, it was silly.
You could see it was glittery stuff that just spinning, but it was quite well done, actually.
They must have felt really silly, though, doing it.
Yes.
Maybe so, yeah.
When you've been doing Doctor Who for as long as you've been doing it for, the silliness factor eventually just goes out the window.
No, when you say silliness, you mean science fiction fantasy TV, aren't you?
Obviously, that's how you go through one of those portals.
Of course it is, yes. Laurie Nick says, okay, gents and gals, you can take a breather now and fan yourselves. Oh, we are fans, yes. But...
yes, I'm sorry, I did fangirl quite mightily.
So yes, the Brigadier saves the day brilliantly. And I love the scene at the end where we're all in that big garden and he's going to make them tea while the girls go out and thing. So
are you any good with the lawn, Noah?
Yes. Yeah, that was going to be my other quote, was the Doctor when he says, "I'll cook supper."
So it's a bit of a gloss through. If I've missed out anything anybody wants to talk about, please do now, because we're going to move on to what we thought of the story section now.
Master?
Yes.
This was the lowest viewing numbers of any Doctor Who of the classic series.
Fools.
That's ridiculous.
It must have been on when the snooker was on with Steve Davis and whatever. Who was it? Steve Davis and Dennis...
Well, it was 3.1 million, something like that.
Yeah. Something else must have been on at the same time. Maybe it was a hot day. I don't know.
Yeah.
This was the point when they were showing it against Coronation Street.
Probably, yes.
If I remember right.
What day of the week was that as well? Was it not shown on a Sunday or a Saturday? It was on Friday.
Friday.
So is that it? Was that your contribution to... I'm going to move on then. Right then, so, Battlefield. I was thinking there's a lot of good stuff in this series, to be fair, but I think Battlefield has probably got to be my favourite Seventh Doctor story. Yeah. Simply because it is a really enjoyable story. It's got lots of action. It's got a little bit of comedy. It's got great acting. A great effort on the special effects. Rolls on, and there was one episode that was nearly half an hour, and I didn't realise. I thought it seemed really short to me. So the fact that the episodes are flying through really quickly for me indicates to me I'm really, really enjoying it. And yes, it was a bit cheesy in some ways. The fact they got the Brigadier in, there's lots of deliberate little sort of history of Doctor Who drop-ins there, but it wasn't as bad as some of the John Nathan Turner's history of Doctor Who drop-ins, which I think they're really only properly appropriate on anniversary stories, to be fair, but I didn't really bother me that much because Battlefield is such good fun. Absolutely adore it. And Jean Marsh completely lights up the screen when she's on it, even though she's got a lot of lighting on her. And so I'm just so pleased I can talk about a Seventh Doctor story with such glee and excitement.
Yes.
Because
it's unusual for you.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Wonderful Doctor Who brilliance. What did you think of it, Kirby?
I absolutely love this one. It's not my absolute favorite Seventh Doctor, but it's wonderful. I can just watch it anytime. I watched it again with Fred, and Fred's only thing is that she does not see how the Doctor could be Merlin.
Oh, well.
That was something to skip over.
Yes.
Yeah, really.
Is that it, Kirby?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
Now, next week is one of my absolute favorites.
Okay, well, before, so I don't forget, right, this is what Andrew Cartmell said.
Well, I've always loved Battlefield, and Ben Aronovich, who wrote it, has always not loved it. Right. He just felt it didn't come off for many, many reasons. But the only thing that I really didn't like about it, I mean, there are deficiencies, because this is a fantastic script which doesn't quite come across. So, for instance, there's this bit where they're supposed to be in a spaceship, and I think it's Ace who has the line. It's like we're in the inside the body or inside the belly of a huge beast, and what they're actually on is a spiral staircase with some Christmas lights on it. So it doesn't always live up to the magnificence of the script, but it is a magnificent script, and I would just and fantastic acting in it. And the Arthurian thing is really strong. I mean, Jean Marsh was wonderful, wasn't she?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And we also have one of the finest monsters in terms of prosthetics that we ever had, the Destroyer.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had no complaints about the Destroyer, because I'm always bitching about how bad some of the creature costume work was. And the Destroyer just looks great. Yeah. And one of the sequences that I've always loved best in this show is the one where they're inside the pentagram. The Dark Forces Outside, yeah. Which is very much inspired by the great Hammer movie, The Devil Rides Out, written by Richard Matheson from a Dennis Wheatley novel. So I've got all these great memories of that story. Yeah. I know that there are deficiencies, and I know that Ben was disappointed with the way it turned out, but I think that the rest of us can still look at what a great classic it is.
Thank you, Andrew. What did you think of it, Robert?
I quite like it. I mean, there are some things I don't like about it, because I think there's probably sometimes a bit too much going on. Like, you know, you get this scene at the end with the destroying of destroying of the destroyer. That makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
And that's sort of like a climax. And then, we got the nuclear missile on top of that. But that does lead to a nice scene where the Doctor, you know, written by Andrew Cartmell, this bit was the speech that he gives about nuclear weapons and that, which, you know, he talks to Morgaine about. And that was such a lovely scene, I thought. But there were silly things like, you know, when they find Anselin in the brewery and she says, oh, is that an android? It clearly doesn't look like an android. It looks like somebody in armor, because they haven't designed them like futuristic robots, or you know the design work didn't come through in that, so it gets let down a bit by things like that. But sometimes I think it's probably just a bit too much going on, but it is quite enjoyable, and it, you know, it's a lovely time to spend. And I just love Sophie in it, Sophie and the Doctor, and I love the way that they throw themselves into the scenes. It provides a lot of energy, you know, like when there's exploding bombs and here they are diving to cover and things like that. I love the, you know, that they're very action oriented. One thing that again is let down with this sort of era, I did like that they use videotape to provide continuity between outside and inside scenes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it used to be jarring in the old series. You'd be in videotape inside, then, we know we're outside now because we're on film. But videotape's not really that good at conveying action as well as film. I mean, to me, it still looks like they're using a multi-camera set up outside. But, it's quite enjoyable. I just think probably a bit too much going on for my liking. But otherwise, you know, full of great actors doing great scenes. And I wish they got a more flattering jumper for Nick Courtney to wear, because that was a very unflattering jumper that he wore, wasn't it?
Probably.
Very 80s.
Thank you, Robert. Debbie, what did you think?
Well, following on from Robert, I think it could have stood being another episode. Some people probably wouldn't appreciate that, but I'm sorry, I've got a cat on me. I really do enjoy this story. It's toss up between this one and Remembrance for me from Sylvester's tenure. And I just I really enjoy this. I've always loved the Arthurian legends, and just to share it this time round, because in 2014, obviously, Isla was just four. She was probably aware that I was watching Doctor Who, but she's sort of osmosised it into her, the love of it. And she's to watch it with her this time round, and for her to go, I was like, we're going to watch an episode tonight. No. Can we carry on? Lally, there's another three episodes. No. Can we carry on? Okay, we can watch another one. And then the time's creeping up. It's a school night. And she's like, no, I got to know. And it's like, all right, fine.
That's very good.
And I wondered if it had been available back then, obviously, because you're so used to waiting a week. Because I remember this one so well. And just... I think I would have just binged this one as well back then, because it's just fun. It's fun. Jean Marsh as well, obviously, her as Bav Mordo in Willow is just sensational, and she deploys a lot of her movements here. Like when she does when she downs the helicopter, and her hand movement is very Bav Mordo cursing everybody into pigs bit, and it's just, yeah, there was so much of my childhood in this as well that I have a very, very big soft spot for this. The acting's great. The use of the music in this one is actually
good point.
Better.
I forgot to mention about the music.
Yes,
it's
exactly.
A lot better. The use of the music in this, especially when they're in the circle, is really good. The threat element of the music this time is it just all came together really well. But most of the way through, I had to argue with Isla about the fact that Andrew Cartmell is not called Andrew Cartmell. he quite appreciated that one. And we had to watch another episode, because we'd already gone on to the next episode, to prove it. Because even if I showed her the Wikipedia page, it said Andrew Cartmell. She's like, no, it said Andrew Caramel on the end.
Goodness.
And just, I think the main thing is, at the moment, I'm really enjoying watching Isla appreciating, at the same age that I was, just a little bit younger.
Yeah.
Going through exactly what I was
going
through.
For my son.
Yeah. Sorry?
Didn't work for my son. You're lucky.
I am incredibly lucky, because we obviously, when we started recording, she was downstairs crying her eyes out about the fact that the Doctor and Donna were dead, and then I don't know if you heard her cheering because the Earth was put back. she's really I'm very lucky that she's got into it, but I've never pushed it on her. It's just that it is a big part of my life.
That's why mine don't like it, because I tried to push it on them, and I know obviously Alicia did sort of pretend to like it for a bit, and she might come back, you never know.
Some of those early ones she really did like it. There was one where she went on for 20-25 minutes about some story.
Maybe so, we'll see what happens with that one.
I thought Izzy liked it.
She did for a long time, then she got into Stranger Things, and that was it.
She doesn't like Old Who at all, but she might dabble here and there with
and I'm lucky because Fred really loves Old Who. She's disappointed we're about to run out of Old Who.
Anyway, Kirsty Bissett sent some audio in.
Yay.
Ooh.
I don't know if it's going to work, but we'll give it a try. I didn't do anything. it was sent through via Facebook, so I'll see if I can get it to download. Oh, it doesn't want to do anything. Oh, no, it's just downloaded. Right, hang on.
I just asked her if she's done with the play, and I'm expecting an answer in a second, too.
Well, we'll play her audio. Here it comes.
Hello, 20 megabyte podcasters. It's kind of weird when you hear that on the outside.
Too quiet. Okay, well, play her audio.
Too quiet.
No, it's too quiet. Right then. So, Matthew, what did you think while I do some skullduggery with this audio?
Jiggery pokery.
Yes,
skullduggery.
I am a proud, fully paid up Seventh Doctor fanboy sitting over here. So I'm going to
really.
You're going to gush, are you?
I am going to gush a little bit. I really adore this one, but it's also in part because it's so many of my favorite things in one place. It's my favorite Doctor and companion. It's the return of Unit and the Brigadier, because I'm also a big Third Doctor fan, and there's a lot of callbacks to the Third Doctor era in this, not just with Bessie showing up, but also, you've got an isolated village where people can't really seem to get in or out, and nobody can communicate with them really easily, so it's the demons all over again, which is a story I absolutely adore. The Arthurian legend stuff, which, fun fact, there's a, at one point, Ben Aronovich talks about the DVD thing. He says, well, I went and bought this particular book on it, and I actually had a copy of that book.
Yeah.
In my
did you really?
I did.
That's the illustrated one, wasn't it, or something?
Yes. I had it in my teens. I have no idea what happened to it in between a couple of house moves, so I'll have to track down another copy of it. And there's also, you know, Mary's going to get a laugh out of this. There's a slight Quatermass feel to it as well. Because it is basically... Well, Nigel Neal was going to write a King Arthur story, it would be something very similar to Battlefield, I think. And particularly the way we were talking about the way silver is done at the end and how important it becomes to the destroyer. It's Iron in the Martians from Quatermass in the Pit. If yeah, Robert, I think, will know what I'm talking about at the end of that. Where that
becomes
the whole
thing. I know what you're talking about, too.
Yay! More people get my reference.
Adam Mount.
Never mind.
Even Cartmel says, you know, brings up the Quatermass, that it was very influenced by that. So you're not alone.
Ben says it, doesn't he? In the DVD?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, I couldn't. I didn't get the chance to watch it, watch the DVD extras again, because even though I have the Blu-ray, which, like Robert says, I highly recommend getting. I'm actually curious, if I may, which version of the story did everybody watch? Because there are three different versions of it in circulation.
Yeah, I watched the original broadcast version. I know there's a special edition also on the DVD, which I've not seen yet.
Okay. So it seems like most everybody...
But the Blu-ray too, wasn't there, Matthew, though?
Yeah, there's the original broadcast version, which seems to be what everybody watched. There's the DVD special edition where they edited it into a movie. And then for the Blu-ray, they recreated the 4-episode extended version that was released on VHS in the late 90s.
Much better, doesn't it, on Blu-ray, I reckon?
It does. I mean, as a big Classic Who fan, I was, you know, and with a very sizable DVD collection that I had obviously invested a fair chunk of money in, I was very skeptical about the Blu-rays because stuff was shot on video to begin with, so how much better is this going to look? And I have to say, but it actually took a panel at Chicago TARDIS last year. Which I'm so sad that they're not going to be able to hold it, at least in the traditional sense, this year, to actually see a panel where they actually walk through some of the technical details about it and also did comparisons on it. Mm. And I have to say that this stuff, and also the earlier Tom Baker and John Pertwee seasons that have been released as well, all look fantastic in HD. So, you know, between to see them in the best quality you may well ever get to see them in, as well as some new special features, I highly recommend the Blu-ray set for it. But I will say, I think the story has got, from a writer's point of view, it's got some very big structural issues to it. And I think that Ben Aronovich is absolutely correct that, for one thing, it takes too long for the Brigadier to get involved in the action. It's halfway through the story before he's really making any kind of serious input on things. So you're basically spending half a story reintroducing a character that you're going to bring in. And also, I think from a production point of view, it does have some faults. Is it Michael Carrigan was the director of this one? I don't have my notes here.
That's correct.
Yeah, not necessarily the greatest. He's great for atmosphere and he's great for mood, but he's not the greatest action director Doctor Who has ever had. Yeah. That first sword fight in episode one around the TARDIS with Bambara just randomly popping off shots here and there.
Yeah.
It's an example of how Classic Who should not have done action sequences and fight scenes, but it did anyway. And I have to say, you know, talking about the structural issues with it, the special edition version where it's all one long movie, I think actually flows and works a lot better than either of the episodic versions do. And I think that actually speaks to what you were talking about, Debbie, that about how well it flows. Yeah. But I think it's that you have to figure out how to put the story in order. And I think the broadcast version, they didn't quite figure that out, but they certainly did when they came around to the DVD and the Blu-ray. So
they rearranged the order, didn't they, in the DVD Blu-ray version? Yeah, they changed the order of the scenes, yeah.
Yeah, they streamlined it a bit, but they also figured out that how you rearrange scenes. It's the same thing that I'm sure we'll talk about in 2 weeks' time when we do Fenric, because Fenric's another one that's up from the same problem. Mm. So I'm just over here gushing and rambling. I very much enjoy this story. I wouldn't call it my favorite Seventh Doctor story, but it's one I very much enjoy just because there's so much in it to like, even with all the flaws it does have.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you, Matthew. Well, now Kirsty's feedback is either going to be too loud or it will only be too loud. That's the only option.
By the way, Master, she has given me a shorter review if it doesn't work.
Oh, okay.
Hello, 20 megabyte podcasters. It's kind of weird when you say that on the outside. I'm currently at the bottom of a lake checking on this alien ship, so I thought I would phone it in, something akin to what Kirby does when he reads out feedback. Now you can't interrupt me, Kirby, because this is a recording.
Yes, you can.
Just, you know.
All right, well, I'll start with my opening line, which is... blowing the occasional chunk out of the earth keeps them amused. All right, on to the review. I was really, really looking forward to being here for this one, for numerous reasons, of course. But it's a good, fun, well-paced episode, which does some interesting things with the Doctor's character. We get some actual magic tricks, really, kind of, you know, the Doctor doing mind tricks on people. It's really kind of cool. This really kind of plays into my whole theory that this is kind of, if you overlaid New Doctor Who into this, you know, this is an emergence of the Timeless Child, and, you know, things go awry, whatever. Anyway, back to the story. No, it was really good. I mean, we got some really handsome knights, Ansel and hello, that long hair. Anyway, the Brigadier, what's not to love? This is probably... I mean, I like the Brigadier throughout all the stories, but this being his last, you know, like, big appearance, it is great. He saves the day with one of my favorite lines ever in Doctor Who. You know, I just do the best I can.
Yeah.
And just shoots him in pure Brig fashion, and it's just glorious. You just really kind of see a shift in some of the production values on this. They've made good use of the locations, apart from the weather, of course, which, hey, can't help that. Sorry, but it's rough. But yeah, some of the costuming in there, the Destroyer, it would have been good if he was bigger, but, you know, you got to do with what you can get. But I thought the mask work on that was great, and the attempted water effects. Anyone who's watched the new series, when they did the Waters of Mars, they saw the stuff that they were using for that and how advanced that seemed. You know, and here they had, you know, the Destroyer kind of drooling. Yeah, it looked like water, but it's still
too much drooling,
you know, for that time. I'm still kind of impressed looking at some of the effects work in this. It's a fantastic story. At Robert's suggestion, I have picked up the Blu-rays and by an amazing Amazon delivery. It's going to be here today. Ooh, so I'll be watching this over again, I think.
It's getting delivered, Blu-ray, but she can't see it yet.
And going over the extras. So, Kirby, I've got the Blu-ray.
We can use that line again.
All right. Well, until next week, which I don't know if we'll be here for that either. Dang it. Maybe I'll send in a Blu-ray. This is Kirsty signing off.
Well, thank you, Kirsty. At least I know now that if she sends any more audio in, I have to put it into audition and bump up the volume. That sounds like an old song, doesn't it? Bump up the volume.
Bump up the volume.
Yeah. Yes, we know you managed to interrupt. Well, carry on.
Yeah, well, I was also going to read you her shorter review anyway.
What?
Why?
Why?
It's because.
Why? He wants to. He likes reading out feedback.
She says, I like it. Lots.
Okay, more or less what she said just then.
Is that it?
think that's what my cat's trying to say. Will you get away from the microphone, please?
Okay. Mary. I'm intrigued to hear what you think of it.
Well, for once, I'm in complete agreement, at least, with what Andrew Cartmill wrote in his book about this one.
Right.
He hated it.
What?
And I hated it, too. Now, he said, you know, that the script was amazing. And yes, they did base it, you know, on these Quatermass stories. And in his opinion, the script was golden. You know, this was going to be one of the best Doctor Who episodes. But once they turned it over to the production team, the director, everything fell apart. And that nothing really worked the way it was supposed to. The vision that the director had, the knights were supposed to be futuristic. They were supposed to look like RoboCops, you know, with very advanced weapons. But instead, he got, you know, these ancient-looking, you know, Knights of the Round Table, which was not the intention. Even though the story was based on that, he did not want that, you know, literally. and when you look at the battles that they fight, I mean, those were the most boring and stupid-looking battles you could want. And the Destroyer, which was supposed to be this amazing monster, and he was, in appearance, he was. But, I mean, if he can zap the Brigadier from across the room, what is this about Morgaine? I mean, she's got the monster all chained up. But then when she goes to another part of the room, she brushes not just past him, but right up against him, almost bumps him aside as she walks by. And I think, well, he's a Destroyer. He could destroy her right now while she's touching him. But, you know, that didn't work out. And when Ace, after the building explodes, all that stuff should have killed Ace and the other girl.
What is polystyrene, though?
But then when he calls out Ace, you know, they're throwing this stuff off, you know, totally destroying the effect. I'd say there was too much material for three episodes, but not quite enough for four, because everything got resolved about the middle of the fourth episode. And then we got treated to a lot of stand around, you know, grinning and talking about things and admiring Bessie and the girls are going to go somewhere. I mean, you know, that part totally lost me. I wanted a more impact of a finish. Now, there were good things about it. Morgaine and the chalk circle scene. Oh, that was amazing. And her curing the blind woman as payment, you know, for her son's drink. there were some amazing scenes. And the acting, everybody was acting their socks off. Yeah. But, I mean, how do you get over this bizarre little special effects creature zapping around inside the ship, bumping the doctor around? That was just so stupid. I mean, there were just so many. The good was off balanced by these really stupid special effects and visionary things. When you read, if any of you remember from reading Cartmell's book, he was so disappointed. And even the author, Ben, he tried to watch it and couldn't even get past the first 10 minutes of it. He hated what happened to it so much. So I'm in agreement with them. I think that this could have been a really amazing story, but I think it all fell apart with vision and the stupid special effects and all that. And it's a waste of really, really good acting.
Okay.
Tell us what you really think about it.
It wouldn't be the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast if we didn't all have different opinions. Come on, I'm boring.
We know when we've got a good story if we all agree on it. Laurie Nick says,
I have Isla here, Adam.
Pardon?
Hello.
Hello, Isla.
What did you think about it, Phil?
You should have been here when you had Sophie on.
All of the other Doctor Who's that I've watched, and I'll probably love all of the ones I haven't too.
Isla?
Yes?
Who's Andrew Cartmill?
Mum said it was Andrew Cartmill.
I'm corrected, sorry.
I said Andrew Cartmill.
It just does scroll through quite quickly.
I'm sure he's probably been, he probably knows that it sounds a bit like caramel.
She would have been on for Sophie, but it was the only opportunity we had for Bath.
There you go. I think Sophie would have loved to have had a chat with you.
Sophie, which is more important?
I'm sorry, darling. The moment you came upstairs, she was busy telling a tale, so...
But she still did stay on for half an hour longer than she meant to, so that was...
I know, there'll be another opportunity, you'll see.
Yeah. Laurie Nick says, whoop, whoop, go Kirsty, go... Kirsty, go Kirsty, and then she says the volume is good. I know because I had a bit of skullduggery and jiggery pokery going on.
Shenanigans.
And that. Right then, it's time to move on to feedback. Kirby, I think this is your segment.
Yes, it is.
Get off my world.
No, I'll leave my phone back if he sends me Alan's.
Yeah. Okay. Get off my world.
Get off my world.
I will do once we've done the feedback.
That's why we had it as the quote, because it's Isla's
favourite.
Let me know when I can start.
Well, now.
Now.
Jeff Franklin.
Shh, Isla.
Who?
Jeff Franklin says, love the Seventh Doctor.
Yay.
Kirsty says, you don't say LOL. Robert Weeks Jr. Has a picture of the Brigadier and Morgaine together, and with a quote from the Brigadier, now when you play rock, paper, scissors, paper covers rock. Okay. Well, and my Alexa just did ding for some reason.
Well, you shouldn't say that word, should you?
Laurie Nix says, what? No comments yet? If ever there was a perfect episode of Who for the Seventh Doctor, surely this is it. You may fight me, hot interdimensional knight style, if you disagree. Can you say underrated?
Underrated, there we go.
Well, yes, underrated. No. Robert Wiss Jr., I do my review around 6 or 7 a.m. I'm looking forward to doing it. Battlefield is one of my favorites, next to Remembrance of the Daleks.
Snap.
Yeah. What? Were you going to say something?
Yeah. What?
No, I just said snap.
Oh, okay. And obviously, around whatever time that was, Robert Wins Jr. now has my review of Battlefield or Doctor Who and the Renaissance Festival people who like playing killer laser tag. Just a wonderful Doctor Who story. The Doctor and Ace received a distress signal and land at Lake Vortigern, home of the legend of King Arthur. The Doctor finds out in the future he is known as Merlin. Morgaine and her son Mordred, with his evil laugh, as well as two armies, show
up. He did go on a bit much, didn't he?
I will say, I meant to have mentioned that I watched this with the special edition with subtitles, and that whole section just had one subtitle, all caps, in parentheses, laughing maniacally.
The Brigadier gets a call of the Doctor showing... What? The Brigadier gets a call of the Doctor showing, and he takes off. There is fighting, and we are introduced to Brigadier Bambera, played by Angela Bruce, with her famous line, oh, shame.
Yeah. I've got that on my hand.
Shame. Oh, really? You'll never say it.
That oh, shame stuff.
Ace meets an old friend, Morgaine, played by Jean Marsh, wants Excalibur, which she gets, but loses it. Her son Mordred, played by Christopher Bowen, does go a little over the top at times. Really?
It's a little.
No, he's fine.
In the end, Morgaine gets control of a nuclear weapon. The Doctor talks her out of setting it off with one of the great Doctor speeches, death gone mad in the madness. By the way, that speech was a lot longer. Did they have the longer version in the extended edition?
They do not.
Oh, darn. The Brigadier and Ace blow up dead King Arthur's spaceship. The women take off in Bessie and the men stay behind to clean and the Doctor cooks. I enjoyed the destroyer demon, who is killed off by silver bullets, and the Brigadier's fake death. He comes back in the Sarah Jane Adventures story, Enemy of the Bane. So, is Morgaine evil or somewhere in the middle? Unit imprisoned Morgaine and Mordred at the end. I wonder what they will do with them.
Yeah.
The missile simulation that. Seems very similar to the ending of Robot. Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Mm. Yep. Did Andrew Cartmell think about using that ending?
Cartmell.
Yeah.
Cartmell, yes. I like the exchange between the destroyer and the brigadier. The destroyer, little man, what do you want from me? Brigadier, get off my world!
Yes!
Also, the Green Snake Alarm. Very delightful story, and I won't talk about the water tank incident, which you already talked about. My rating, 4 out of 5.
Great review, Robert. Well done. You get one of these. There you go.
Oh, he's giving him left, right, and center.
I'm sorry.
Yes! Skipping Ian Kirk. I wonder why.
Yeah.
Neil James says, Battlefield, bit of a different approach this week. Here's a list of everything I love about this story. Huh. New coat. Oh, shame. The brig is back with a wife and a very big house.
Yes.
Last interior TARDIS scene of the classic series. Huh. And they destroyed part of it, which is why it's dark, by the way. The Doctor's intergalactic money. Great location work, especially the lake. Winifred and Anselin's glorious relationship. Helicopter crash. The Doctor walking through a violent sword fight. Crisp packet alarm clock.
Ah, yeah.
And then Jean Marsh delivering every line with a gleeful, naughty twinkle in her eye.
She's amazing.
Ace coming out of the lake with the sword.
Yeah.
Unit. Yeah. Bessie. Merlin, the destroyer, Winifred and Anselin fighting in the background as
that was a funny scene.
Great. Something else was good. Do you know, remember they're asleep in the pub before the Doctor gets the crisp back into bang, and they've got Bambera leaning on and Anselin, they're both leaning against each other.
Yes, that was nice.
I wasn't
done. There are two scenes that I adore. The horrific murder of the beautiful Lavelle, immediately followed by Morgaine curing Elizabeth's blindness. And the first meeting in the churchyard of the brig and Morgaine, simply fantastic.
Mm. Yeah.
Wonderful cast, full of humor and action-packed. I love it. Before I watched Battlefield today, I thought I would give it 4 stars, but I had such a good viewing, I couldn't give it any less than 5 stars.
Five stars. Well, Neil, my goodness. I have to say, though, the scene in which... Where, you know, that scene where she gives the lady her sight back. It's beautifully played. And it's lovely. Really, really
you
nice scene.
You'd that, weren't you? Because she killed the lady, the soldier first, and then paid the tab. And she was like, why would she do that? And I was like, because she can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Neil James also says...
Sorry, Robert. Robert?
Can I ask you something, Adam?
Mm.
You've seen Only Fools and Horses, haven't you?
Probably seen all of it, but I can't remember.
Do you remember the one that Angela Bruce was in?
No. Batman and Robin? Doesn't she play Rodney's girlfriend?
I mean, that was one of the funniest scenes, I thought, when they come to her rescue. I just remember her from that.
Well, she's been in lots of stuff, hasn't she? But yeah, she's a legend. I remember first she was in Coronation Street. When Ray Langton left, he went off with her. And being in the late 70s and being a mixed race actress, it was a bit of a sort of
controversy.
First thing in soap operas that you know, an ethnic character was sort of brought in as that sort of scandal in some way for Ray Langton to leaving. Deirdre with baby Tracy, but you have to know a bit about Coronation Street to know the characters I'm talking about. But she's a bit of a legend, to be fair.
I remember when I did my big Red Dwarf watch through about 8-9 years ago. She shows up at one point when they cross over into a parallel universe as the female Dave Lister.
She does.
She gets him pregnant.
Yes.
I love Red Dwarf.
Sorry, Kirby, that was good fun. What Neil then went on to say?
Neil goes on to say, the 4-part version is great, but I do favor the special edition on the DVD. Very epic. And then, why am I not surprised? Matthew Kressel, says my fuller review of Battlefield published on my, put my in there, Matthew.
I did.
Birthday.
What?
In 2009 on the Doctor Who ratings guide with a link. You gotta read us that?
I mean, I could.
No.
really want. Oh, that's way too long.
Right. That's what she said.
That, unless, let me refresh the page, make sure there's nothing else.
Right, should we move on?
That's it, yes, I believe that's
you.
It.
Thank you very much. Right then, so we got this.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast.
Hello, Ian.
We have a great responsibility. England is under lockdown for 4 weeks until the podcast finishes the Sylvester McCoy era. Votan, what was the Southampton score?
Southampton beat Newcastle United 2-0.
Why, aye, pet. That is, yes, dear, in Newcastle dialect.
Exterminate.
No, I said dialect. Battlefield by Ben Aronovich. Legend of King Arthur gets the Doctor Who treatment, as invaders from another dimension. They have magic there, and their version of the Doctor is Merlin. Probably not E-Space, then. We have the old Brigadier and a new one. The new one has a tempestuous relationship with Anselin, a swordsman from the other dimension. Ace gets to try a little tank, but does not like it. Bessie's back.
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government.
That's enough.
Very well done, Ian, as ever. Well done.
Yes.
Right then, we've swapped it around a little bit in regards to other bits of feedback. So, Mary, you have some feedback to read out, don't you?
Yes, I do. And it goes, the two brigadiers, or the Z cars in Julia Bravo retired.
Z cars, by the way, Mary.
Z cars.
I'm American. I say Z cars.
I'm American.
Z cars.
Dear 20 megabiters, Battlefield is, of course, a closely studied survey of various layers of conflict, which come in various forms. The ongoing conflict amongst those from an alternate dimension is crashed into further conflicts amongst people in the world of our near future, now ancient past. Obviously, this is a demonstration that such conflict may result from a long-established relationship of enemies, or just as easily a superficial mistrust among strangers. It emerges that sometime in the past, the Doctor will attempt to create a balance to deter conflict by setting up a fake legend of a potentially returning Arthur who has a complicated emotional connection to his half-sister and son who are his enemies. The revelation of his actual death is, however, as impactful to his enemies as the fake myth. The inclusion of the destroyer and the nuclear missile is interesting. The former is perhaps a manifestation of a form of conflict to do with destructive attitude, leading to a really corrosive effect to all over time. The latter rather suggests the level of practical destructiveness, which may lead even more quickly in the same direction. It should be noted that whilst the writer of this story is apparently not very proud of how this turned out, in fact, it stands up relatively well to the waning interest by the production team to tell coherent stories in full. So it may be a bit flawed in that respect, but the mysterious take founded on a legendary theme does help pull it off successfully. We also learn that Berger from the freighter that killed off the dinosaurs also fell backwards in time. To the late 20th century, and was for a time blinded and married, calling himself Pat, who had been a policeman in the same area as Kane from Dragonfire. Also, P.C. Lynch from Newtown on Merseyside also retired nearby and took up an interest in archaeology. All in all, Battlefield is quite interesting and entertaining. It is fairly bold to heavily enlist the Arthurian legend and expose the final fate of Arthur as propaganda or fake news, while also keeping Morgaine's inappropriate regard for Arthur intact, but neatly sidestepping their sibling relationship.
Yes.
Yes.
The Seventh Doctor as Merlin is intriguing, but underdeveloped as an idea, and sadly, as all too often, McCoy strays into being over the top a number of times, here in a way Pertwee did on maybe two or three occasions in his whole run. His performance is generally good, however, and the only big misstep here is not the actors, but the odd introduction of the Doctor's Jedi mind trick. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. Anselin and Bambera may have more romantic development of their characters of any in the series' history. The Destroyer is impressive and would have credibly fitted into productions over a decade later, like Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Yeah, ever groundbreaking, Ace gets very wet, possibly on several occasions, but particularly when she nearly got actually sliced in half by a broken tank. In the grand tradition of the show of never having resources to waste, the footage with cracking glass makes the final cut. Having both the Brigadier and a Brigadier is welcome, of course, and it is very difficult to decide whether it was a good or bad thing that the chance of a noble demise for one of our favorite most established characters was not taken. This time, the more established talent are able to make the most of their parts in the story. This story is at least one episode and a sequel too short, because it would be nice to have a bit of clarity on quite a few plot points, and the later encounter of the Doctor and an earlier Morgaine could have made the whole thing work significantly better. Next up, Doctor Who and the Unexplained Story, or The Light is On, But There's No Story at Home. those are my thoughts, Alan T. Butcher.
Well, thank you, Alan.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. I really hope that Alan collects all of this into a book when this is over with.
I'm sure he will.
I would be very happy to read it. I do want to pick up on a couple of things he said, if I may. Talking about sequels and information, the novelization of this story does have a sequence involving the future Merlin Doctor. And it's actually that, which is actually the origin of the running gag about the Doctor being Ginger in Modern Who. Wondering if he's Ginger, because the future Doctor who becomes Merlin, who ends up in Trap Board Morgaine, is Ginger. He is redheaded. So that's where that gag comes from, for anybody who didn't know. And it's Bambera and Anselin pop up as reoccurring characters in two or three of the Virgin New Adventures, where they do end up together as a couple, actually, and do have a couple of children at one point. I think that's in Head Games, whose author is escaping me at the moment, but I want to say Steve Cole is the author of that one.
Thank you, Matthew. Debbie, you've got something to what's the word for it, dictate.
Dictate, read, enunciate. Feedback for Battlefield. Hi, everybody. The Doctor and Ace answer a distress call and are brought to Earth in the future, not too far, as they have voice calling on landlines and a £5 coin. Hang on, is that a female Brigadier? About time. They have parked a nuke beside a lake out in the open. Even camouflaged, it looks like a bunch of lorries with rocket launchers in tow. That is a 10-year-old archaeological dig, and they have parked right on top of it. What are UNIT doing with nukes? The Knights have a great way of travelling through space. They use the Russian way of landing. Ouch. Hang on, is that Joanna from the Knights of Jaffa? Has a doppelganger called Sarah Kingdom. Jaffa, sorry. Sarah was a companion for the Hartnell Doctor, who was supposed to have had aged to death, but it seems she must have been Morgaine all along.
Yes.
Great to see Brigadier Lethbridge-Stewart again, and of course Bessie. Brought back memories seeing the kit the UNIT soldiers were using. Mordred was more of a mum dread, her right mummy's boy.
Yeah.
When it came to opening up the tunnel entrance, Ace's Nitro 9 was a bit more Nitro 19. See at Childhood's End by Sophie Aldridge. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that was Nitro 90 in Childhood's End.
Spoilers.
All right. Ooh. Ace's water antics nearly killed her, and her impression of the Lady of the Lake was great.
Yeah.
The destroyer looked good, and the Brigadier winning the day was, as Ian says so well, excellent. Once again, the Doctor is showing another side to his foolish facade. Linda says it was all right, but I enjoyed it. What's not to like? You had the Brig times two, Bessie, Nitro 9, and a very wet Ace, no spoons. Everybody please stay safe, Linda and Terry Miles.
Thank you, Linda and Terry Miles. Fantastic stuff.
Here. He gets them out of his pocket at one point and throws them at Ace when he's taking everything out.
Right,
Master?
Yes.
That someone talking about the concrete tunnel.
Yes.
Reminds me that really bugs me in the story when the Doctor says that it was anachronistic when it wasn't, because even the Romans and the ancient Egyptians. Yeah. Could create.
Yes, I shouted that out loud, actually, yeah. Kirby. It was that was the Romans at least had concrete.
Yeah, they had concrete. They had a way with concrete that we still haven't been able to master.
Indeed.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah, but didn't Merlin design that concrete, though?
Yes.
Maybe. We could just take it for granted.
Yeah.
Oh!
Anyway.
Yay! I wondered if anybody was going to catch that.
While we've still got a little bit of time left, Doctor Who News.
Matthew,
yeah, that's not
Matthew, that's not nice.
No, but it probably might be nice.
Shush. Win a Doctor Who VIP tour. The BBC is offering one person their very own VIP tour of Doctor Who set in Cardiff. Lucky winner will be drawn from a list of entries to a prize draw in aid of BBC Children in Need and is available for those in the UK only. Bad luck, everyone. The visit will take place as soon as it is safe to do so. In the meantime, the winner will also get a personal video call from current Doctor Jodie Whittaker and Mandip Gill. And receive a host of exclusive Doctor Who merchandise, some of which is signed by the cast. Those who want to enter the draw have the opportunity to donate £10 of Children in Need. To enter, you will have to text the word DOCTOR to 81155. So, there you go. Jeffrey Palmer has passed away. What?
Have you entered?
No. Jeffrey Palmer has passed away at the age of 93. He is a TV legend.
Yes.
Simple. Underlined. TV legend, and yes, yeah, very sad. And a Doctor Who stalwart, and he's in one of my favourite episodes of Fawlty Towers as well, just to throw that one in. Plays the Doctor who wants his sausages.
Playing about his salad, yes. Wasn't he?
I'm a doctor. And
he was great in a sitcom with Judi Dench called As Time Goes By as well, which if people haven't seen, I highly recommend.
Yeah, it ran for a long, long time, that sitcom. Yeah, brilliant stuff. Warmaster, Hearts of Darkness. Oh, that looks, the picture is absolutely, I want to listen to that one. It's the Tale of Two Time Lords and the swashbuckling new sets of full cast audio dramas and Big Finish as Warmaster Hearts of Darkness is released today. That was the 28th of October. And it features, it says Warmaster Heart of Darkness is pitted one against Paul McGann's Eighth Doctor in a quest to take down his mortal enemy and take over the universe. So obviously, the War Master, of course, Sir Derek Jacobean. There's a lovely picture on DoctorWhoNews.net of the cast. Not socially distancing, but we won't mention that. Oh, damn, I just...
Well, it was recorded last year.
Was it recorded last year?
In the before times, Adam.
They already record them well in advance.
Then the before that's times. That's a satisfactory explanation. That's it for Doctor Who News. We've had a few celebrity passings.
I was going to say there Doctor was another connected. Death that was
Sean Connery, sorry, Sir Sean Connery, notedly, has passed away, and it's quite shocking.
An actor who was in one of the Adric stories passed away. I'm trying to remember his name.
Go on, then.
I can't remember
Bobby
his name.
Ball. Bobby Ball, that is obviously an acting and comedy legend in Britain. and he was filming last year a comedy series on the Isle of Wight, and they were supposed to be making the next series here on the island this year. So I think that might be the end of that, because he was the main character in the series. But Bobby Ball was again a comedy legend.
Oh, yeah.
But he's one of these
Cannonball.
Yeah, one of these old time off the cuff comics that can just be funny without putting a lot of effort into it, you know. He obviously did work to a script and that, but he had such an inbuilt encyclopedia of comedy, a bit like Bob Monkhouse, that he was able to just be funny. He's incredible, and such a sad loss again. If anyone else can think about it, because there's been so many people dying recently, I'd like to give some of them a mention, some of which, obviously most of which weren't in Doctor Who, but notable passings.
Alex Trebek.
Big pardon?
Alex Trebek.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jeopardy.
Who is he, sorry?
Host of Jeopardy.
Jeopardy, it's the famous American quiz shows. He's been the host of it since 1984.
Okay. Ooh.
Yeah, he passed away this morning.
What was it called?
Oh, wow.
Jeopardy.
Yeah, but they ask the answer, give you the question, and they got to say the answer.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
Whatever.
All right.
Yeah.
You know that, whatever.
I understand there's a quiz that has that particular setup. I can't remember what it's called now. Passed away. I'm going to put that in Google, because I don't want to miss anybody out. But it's just been quite a like
Australian
football's
comedy legend died today, or yesterday, Jeannie Little. Jeannie Little.
No, don't know Jeannie Little.
She's an Australian celebrity, so you probably wouldn't. she had dementia last 10 years or so.
Yeah. Well, of course, the Manchester United and England legend Nobby Stiles also passed away quite recently. After a long illness, it said, but no, they didn't actually state what the long illness was. But I suppose it doesn't really matter what the long illness is if it ends up killing it. It's just done its job, isn't it? I can't. Unfortunately, I just Googled deaths, and sadly, all it's come up with is the UK Death Index 1837 to 2005.
Cheers, Google.
Wow. Handy. That's handy.
That's helpful.
That's the sort of thing you need, yeah.
If you want to click on that, you have to pay for it anyway. So, but anyway, so if anybody does want to mention anything in regards to people who have passed away, pop it on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast Facebook group, which you can join.
Which you can join.
Yes.
I think too many people have died, especially big names this year already,
yeah,
haven't they?
Yeah. I mean, Tim Brooke Taylor very early on, he passed away of COVID as well, and that was a big loss.
I thought 2016 was bad for celebrity deaths, but this year's pretty up there.
The only thing I will mention in regards to sponsors, Lavazzi, whowon.co.uk, and Heroes.
Is that whowon.co.uk?
Nah.
I'm doing an umbrella mention.
Ella.
Shops in Great Britain, shops that are deemed to be non-essential, have had to close unless they've got click and collect. Fortunately, Heroes in Newport has click and collect. WhoOne is an online shop anyway, and of course, so is Lavazzi. Now, these businesses need your money, and it sounds like a charity beg, but they do. The other businesses, established businesses, are being swamped and disappearing because the government promises to give them money, furlough money or whatever, and it's just not enough to keep the businesses floating because their main part of the year for earning money is gone. Christmas is obviously coming, and who knows how long this lockdown is going to go for, but the whole of November's gone for these businesses to make money.
That's pretty much how I lost my job. I fell ill, and that was enough to go, bye, thank you.
I buy stuff from Amazon and stuff like that, but try looking in other less massively funded businesses before you have to resort to going to Amazon. I mean, Argos is having lots of shops closed because their parent company Sainsbury's is struggling, which surprised me because the food shops have done quite well over the COVID thing.
But, and they sell clothes in the food shop because it's not deemed an essential item elsewhere. It's the only place you can get something.
Argos, for example, is an international company, and also a company that everybody relies on for gadgets or what have you. You can just get virtually what you want, and they're almost like the original version of Amazon.
Yes, they are, aren't they? Yeah.
And I'd hate to see them go. They're obviously they're depleting because they're still going to be available inside Sainsbury's stores, but
they're closing them in Sainsbury's stores.
It's a nightmare. So yeah, support businesses,
support that, local business.
I'm not saying don't buy from Amazon because we're going to do it, but think elsewhere first, like whoone.co.uk, like lavazi.co.uk, and like iwheroes.co.uk. Think them first because they need the money.
Yeah, can I mention something? For example, when you think of Who Won, they carry a lot of the old books.
Yes, that's so, right.
So where else do you go for old books? What,
normally, I go for eBay.
That's what I'm saying, a highly inflated price on eBay.
Well, Doctor Who novels are all available at whoone.co.uk, but they're brand spanking new. They're not old.
Exactly,
Or you do things like, I've been cleaning out my garage and I found two more Target novelizations.
Oh, excellent. Careful, they might be worth something. before I wrap up, Terry Miles has mentioned something that I'm so glad he did, because I would have hated to have forgotten this, but John Sessions also died this week. Such a talented man. I mean, he's been in lots and lots of things, but his ability to play lots and lots of different characters is incredible. I'm pretty sure he's been in Big Finish.
I don't know if he's been in Big Finish. I know that he was the voice of, I'm going to say the train, but that's not quite correct, in Mummy on the Orient Express.
Yeah.
And he was also General Tanis in the Death Comes to Time webcast.
Doctor stuff. Well, that's Doctor Who,
from 2001 that I'm a huge fan of. Yeah,
so again, I first remember him in a series called, I don't know what it was called, but it was
Dentistry.
It was an improv series. What was it called, Deb?
Whose Line Is It Anyway?
That's the one, yeah. He was
He's great in that, but I loved him in Stella Street.
Mm-hmm.
That, when he did the impressions, and he was one of the guys from Rolling Stones. Two of them ran the corner shop. It was hysterical because it was them, but running the corner shop, and it was brilliant. Mm.
Yeah, so again, another sad
If passing. I'm not mistaken, he actually is one of about the 500 people who was auditioned to be the Eighth Doctor at one point.
He was, there was an audition. Somebody posted his audition video for the Eighth Doctor. Yeah. But anyway, I've got a message come through. Was that from before? I'm not sure it's nothing important. I've got a message from Alicia.
Sophie's saying how wonderful we are, and can she join the podcast?
No, Sophie Henderson says, such fun, thanks so much. Sorry, Sophie Aldred, I beg your pardon.
I said that. It'll be Sophie.
Master?
Yes?
Wikipedia says that John Sessions was in a Big Finish audio drama called 100.
But yeah, so like I say, a few sad passings, and there are probably more to come because of some pandemic that seems to be sweeping the earth. Right then, so... last thing to say is next week it is, if my facts are right, the Curse of Fenric. Therefore, it must be Ghostlight.
Yes.
Now, yes. Ghostlight was the last classic series to be filmed.
Well, recorded, because it's shot on video, as Kirby used to pedantically.
Oh, come on. I've been out pedantic.
Before I go, Robert Vence Jr. says, not looking forward to Gaslight next week. I should have got that from his thing. You're right there, Robert.
And see, I think I'm probably the only person of us who happens to like Ghostlight.
You sure you're all right, Robert? They got me set me off now.
Set me off laughing.
Robert Vence Jr. says, thanks for having Sophie on, Adam. Wow, you're welcome. Thank you, Sophie, for coming on. And that's about it.
I also posted a link in the Facebook Live to Sophie's to the season 26 DVD Blu-ray
splendid
trailer.
And I forgot to play this earlier on.
Yeah, I did wonder really? If you could do that whilst you were talking to Sophie.
Yeah.
Okay. Be like, then, so, how are we going to do this? Are we just going to ignore him playing it and just gloss over it, or are we going to explain?
So, control for next week. Oh, sorry. I mean, Ghostlight next week. and we'll be meeting Control. And that's something to watch, isn't it? So until then, thank you for listening, watching, taking part in the show. Keep it all coming in via the usual methods, especially 20mb.feedback@gmail.com, where you can send audio feedback in. Some people do. It's quite good. Until then, goodbye.
Goodbye, fancy pants.
Get a cry.
Bye. So long. Thanks for all the fish.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production sponsored by whoone.co.uk and lavazzi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.